Hello, and welcome to the Peter Mackay Motorsport Podcast. Today is a very special episode. It's the second in our Icons of Scottish Motorsport series. A few weeks ago, I kicked off this series with the inaugural episode featuring one of my absolute heroes, Jim Clark, and all of his achievements, but also who he was as a person and also the legacy that he left behind in Scottish motorsport. And in today's episode, that's what I'm going to continue talking about. The feature of this particular episode is Sir Jackie Stewart, a three-time Formula One world champion and someone who very much took the counsel and advice of Jim Clark. And the theory behind our Icons of Scottish Motorsport series, for those who haven't listened to the Jim Clark episode yet, is that basically I believe that Jim Clark set off a lineage of Scottish motorsport drivers that you can trace right back to him. And if you look at the advice and the help that Jim Clark gave to Sir Jackie Stewart, and then what Jackie Stewart's taken on throughout his life and through owning a team with his son Paul, and how they kick-started a lot of careers of a lot of Scottish drivers at the top level as well. So again, a bit like the Jim Clark one, I'm going to try my very best to do justification to such an incredible man and a great Scot, and I will do my very best to do that. Again, not going to focus too much on hard statistics and things like that. Again, most of Sir Jackie Stewart's statistics are very well recorded and relatively well known as well, both by fans past and present of the sport. So hopefully I'll tell a few stories of what I've picked up over the year from watching any kind of video footage or reading Sir Jackie Stewart's book, Winning Is Not Enough, which is a great read. I can highly recommend it. As well. So hopefully through the episode you'll get an extra appreciation for Sir Jackie Stewart. So Jackie is a three-time world champion. All of his Formula One world titles were won with his great friend Ken Tyrrell in 1969, 71, and 73, all at the wheel of the first one, the 69 in a Matra, and then the other two in Ken Tyrrell's very own car. He had 99 Grand Prix starts and 27 Grand Prix wins from those 99 starts. So an incredible batting average. More than one in four races, he would be taking the chequered flag in first place. And when you consider how many races might have been lost with mechanical failure, it shows you how good a batting average Sir Jackie Stewart had. And that win record, 27 Grand Prix wins, was two more than his great friend Jim Clark, which I'm sure would have meant an awful lot to him. And Sir Jackie held that record for the next 14 years as well in the sport. Before becoming a racing driver, he was a very, very good clay pigeon shooter and shot for Scotland and Great Britain and won international titles all over Great Britain and Europe as well. And as a young boy, he struggled very, very badly at school with reading and writing and spelling and things like that. And only when going to get treatment for his son Mark for dyslexia, only then in his early 40s did he discover that he himself was dyslexic. And dyslexia is a big part of Sir Jackie's charitable work, which has had a big effect in Scotland and in schools becoming better prepared for helping and for teaching dyslexic children. So the dyslexia definitely knocked his confidence, and once he managed to get out of school and started working in his parents' garage, that gave him a lot more confidence and something that he was truly good at. And When he got into the clay pigeon shooting, well, he performed at the very highest level there. And Jackie Stewart said so many times in public that what he learned in his clay pigeon shooting was absolutely relevant to becoming a professional motor racing driver as well. In Formula One, he only drove for two teams. He drove for BRM for the first 3 years of his career, from 1965 to 1967. And then it was with Ken Tyrrell, who really he had the majority of his motor racing success. He went to work with from 1968. So how did Sir Jackie Stewart get from the forecourt of his parents' garage to to becoming a motor racing driver. Well, certainly his father was quietly proud of his son Jackie, but his mother wanted nothing to do with Jackie's hobby of motor racing, and certainly wouldn't be there to support it. And Jackie's older brother Jimmy was also a very, very good racing driver in his own right, and raced for Ikuria Kos. I was a very, very accomplished driver, and interestingly, Jimmy and Jackie's mother was nervous about Jimmy's racing, but wasn't actively against it either, as she was with Jackie. But Jackie, working in the forecourt of his parents' garage in Dumbuck, met a local wealthy customer called Barry Filer, who had a number of very special cars, which he, according to his family trust, he was not permitted to drive. So Jackie started off racing Barry Filer's Porsche Super 90, a car that Jim Clark used, funnily enough, in his early days driving Ian Scott Watson's Porsche Super 90. And also Jackie Stewart got started by racing a Marcos as well, and quickly grabbed the attention of a number of figures in motor racing. David Murray of Ikuria Kos, he ran Jackie in their Tejiro Buick and Cooper Monacos as well. But in these early days, in an effort to keep his motor racing a secret from his parents, from his mother at least, he entered under the name A.N. Other, another, to to try to protect his secret from his mother, who was very much against the idea of him motor racing. But inevitably, as he started to perform even better and win more races, the secret came out, and his all the time he was motor racing, his mother never ever acknowledged the fact that he was a racing driver. She just simply wasn't interested. Even when he won world championships, it was not of an interest to her. Jackie's big break came at Goodwood, when he was invited down by Ken Tyrrell to test the latest Cooper Formula 3 car. This is back in 1964. And Bruce McLaren, who's a high-flying Formula One driver at the time and a very, very experienced test driver as well for a number of different vehicles, a very good engineer as well, Bruce McLaren. Bruce McLaren had been setting the benchmark times, and Jackie Stewart, within just a few laps, given he'd never even driven a single-seater racing car before, was immediately faster than Bruce McLaren. And John Cooper was actually out on track at the time watching Jackie in action and watching his beautifully silky smooth style, and said, you know, straight away to Ken Tyrrell, you need to sign this boy up. So after the test, Jackie went home and he received a telephone call from Ken Tyrrell, who offered him £10,000 a year in salary, which is a huge salary in those days and would have been a massive earning for a newly married man to his lovely wife Helen. But in return, he had to pay back Ken Tyrrell 10% of his total earnings for the next 10 years. So Jackie Stewart said, well, what if I'm not willing to accept that? And he said, well, I can pay you £5 a year, which was the minimum allowed for a contract at the time. But he could keep all of his prize money. And Jackie very bravely took the £5 salary and kept all of his prize money. And in the first year, he earned around £10,000 in prize money, funnily enough, in Formula 3. So he managed to, I think he made the right decision in the end. And that particular year, well, an interesting part of Jackie Stewart's life and a very significant person in his life was a gentleman called Walter Hayes, who was the PR boss for Ford Motor Company. And at the Earls Court Motor Show that particular year, he'd been watching Jackie looking at a beautiful Ford Zodiac on the Ford stand, and he walked up and said, oh, what do you think of the car? And he says, oh, I think it's beautiful. He says, I'll introduce myself. I'm Walter Hayes. I work for Ford Motor Company. How would you like £500 and one of these cars for your own personal use? And of course, that was a very easy question. And that was a contract that actually lasted 40 years in a variety of guises. And Walter Hayes was one of the guys who really made the relationship between Jackie Stewart and Ken Tyrrell work. And Ken Terrell actually picked up the telephone to Walter Hayes at the end of 1967 and said that, he says, I've heard strong rumour that Ferrari are after Jackie Stewart, and I don't think we should allow that to happen. And Walter Hayes, ever the proud Briton, he said, well, we couldn't have Jackie Stewart go to Ferrari. We just couldn't have that. So it was a matter of principle. So with the backing of American giant, automotive giant Ford, the deal was done for Sir Jackie Stewart to go and race for Ken Tyrrell with a Ford engine in the back. In his early days of Formula One, in 1965, you've got to remember when he signed for BRM, it was only his second year as a professional driver, which is absolutely extraordinary, the level of progression that he had. And what I find amazing now is that if you look at young drivers who come up through karting from a very young age in a junior formulae, and they will be given a lot of training and a lot of coaching, and they'll all have a driver coach or a spotter or someone who tells them how to drive the car correctly. And this is something that in the old days, it just fascinates me how people seem to possess this kind of natural ability to get in a car and drive it quickly. And that's something that I just don't believe that there's such a gene that makes you a fast racing driver. It must be a combination of factors from childhood and the environment that you grow up in. Maybe growing up next to a garage maybe just gave you the love of cars and how they work. I don't know. It will remain a mystery to me. So yeah, that first year, Jackie Stewart, he was teammate to Graham Hill, who became a great friend. And he won only his 8th Grand Prix at Monza in Italy, and came 3rd in the World Championship in his debut season. Quite an extraordinary achievement as well. The one thing that makes Jackie Stewart so special, certainly to me, and why he's a real idol for me, I remember a couple of years ago, it was about 4 years ago, I read his book, and it's about 550 pages. It's a really long read. But absolutely engaging. I couldn't put it down. And it's even if you're not into motor racing, it's just a wonderful Bible for how you should conduct yourself as a professional. You know, one thing that Jackie Stewart brought into Formula One was relationships with sponsors, or proper commercial relationships for a driver. And in the 1971 season, he was already earning £1 million per year. But in order to do that, he was always the most immaculately dressed. Every single detail was covered, and the value that he'd give back to the sponsors and would was extraordinary. And in 1971, Jackie Stewart, he was dovetailing a campaign between the Can-Am series, which is now defunct, but it was an incredibly powerful vehicles, American National Series, kind of sports prototype series. He was dovetailing that with a Formula One programme. And in 1971, crossed the Atlantic 87 times. Now, in today, even if you had your own private plane or could afford to fly in first class, that is an extraordinary level of travel, which is would just seem unfathomable today. And that's what he had to do to earn his £1 million. So it did not come for free. And into the 1972 season, he actually developed mononucleosis through just pure exhaustion from the work that he was doing, and Sir Jackie definitely believes that cost him a chance to win the 1972 title, and the one thing you could combine, it was just an incredible combination of what he had, was a real street smart and real commercial aptitude, combined with just an absolute bloody-minded work ethic as well. He managed to sweet-talk Goodyear into giving Tyrrell a tyre testing contract for winter. Now, tyre testing for most racing drivers is a punishment exercise, but he understood the advantage that would give him, and it was 2 weeks solid of two Grand Prix distances a day at Kyalami through the winter. Now, bearing in mind, of course, that that's winter in Europe, not winter in South Africa, so the temperature must have been very hot as well to do that level, but that would have brought them the success that they needed, and also the commercial that would have paid for their winter testing as well. So for any Formula One team to have someone like the Jackie Stewart driving for them had its commercial advantages as well. One of the things that Sir Jack is very well known for, and if you there are a number of drivers, both on the grid today and in the past, who have their lives to they can owe their lives to Sir Jackie Stewart, because safety was something that he really was the pioneer of in campaigning for. We now have the safest motorsport we've ever had, but that it can always be better, of course, and we must never ever take our foot off the gas of improving safety all the time in motor racing. But it was Jackie Stewart who combined campaigned for safety so successfully. He knew that with his profile as a top driver, he was able to make a difference, and he managed to get. He became president of the Grand Prix Drivers Association and got all the drivers together and used their collective voice to make a difference. But he didn't make any friends doing this. At this time, this was an era when racing drivers were meant to be gladiators, and it was all about being manly and how if it's too scary, don't go and do something else. And he would become under really quite horrible criticism. I mean, he was Dennis Jenkinson, who was the chief writer of Motorsport magazine at the time. He branded Jackie Stewart and his supporters as milk and water racers. Now, it's really interesting. When you see journalists who can criticise the bravery of any motor racing driver or motorcycle racing rider, given the fact that A, they haven't, in most cases, haven't experienced the competition themselves, but also have become close to drivers who have lost their life while racing. And in the case of Sir Jackie Stewart, he lost a number of his very best friends. You know, he lost Jim Clark, who was very, very, very close to him. Jochen Rindt, very, very close. Francois Sever, who will come on to poor Francois in a little while of the episode. So, you know, it was very personally, it was clearly very personally and emotionally driven for Sir Jackie, but it was also brought on by an accident that he had at Spa in 1966, that was crashing at 170 miles per hour at the Master Kink, something you wouldn't want to do in today's Formula One car, let alone a late 1960s Formula One car. And through that experience, Jackie was no proper medical assistance. The police escort got lost from the ambulance. The ambulance couldn't find the hospital. I mean, just appalling. And thankfully, he was lucky and managed to recover from the accident. But a lot of others at the time weren't so lucky. And that has been an absolute drive behind Sir Jackie's off-track activity, has been the safety. And he really has to be thanked for what he's done for the sport in terms of the safety of the circuits, the cars, the equipment that the drivers wear to help them. If you look at some of the spectacular accidents that we've had in the last sort of 10 years in the sport, if you remember back in, I think it was 2010 at Valencia, where Mark Webber was thrown probably 10 metres into the air and crashed through a kind of floating advertising board and walked away completely unscathed from an open cockpit racing car. Now, that is something that you just couldn't have done in previous years. If you look at Charles Leclerc at the beginning, six races into the much criticised Halo device that's fitted, the kind of boomerang shaped device that's fitted now to a front of a Formula One car, and there was a massive pile up at the first corner at Spa, and Fernando Alonso's car was launched straight over Charles Leclerc's head. And if that Halo device hadn't been there, it could have been a much, much worse outcome. There are countless examples. If you look at Fernando Alonso's crash at Melbourne in Australia a couple of years ago, how he walked out of that crash, I will never know. And of course, whatever happens in Formula One in terms of safety, that gets extended around the rest of motorsport as well, slowly but surely. So, but had Jackie Stewart not put his head above the parapet and openly criticised, criticising the organisers, the tracks, everything, and taking that risk, who knows where we would be today with our motor racing. So that is one of the biggest things that he campaigned for. Talking of interesting, while we're on the subject of safety, one of the if you type in Jackie Stewart in YouTube, while I was doing my research for this episode, typed in Jackie Stewart on YouTube, and it's just interesting to see what the first thing that came up. And the first thing that came up was what is now a very famous interview between Sir Jackie as a TV reporter and Ayrton Senna, and it's in the very famous Senna movie that was released about 8 or 9 years ago, where the famous line Ayrton Senna says, if you no longer go for a gap, you're no longer a racing driver. And I urge you to go and watch that video on YouTube. It's only about 6 minutes or so, and it's amazing. You see two treble world champions. They both were in the end, with two polar opposite approaches to how you go about motor racing. So they achieved very similar results in their respective eras, but I think maybe particularly the eras that they came from had a drastic effect. Sir Jackie was racing at a time where racing was incredibly dangerous on highly, highly hazardous tracks. Ayrton Senna came into an era in Formula One where, yes, it was still dangerous. The driver was a lot more exposed. It was almost from the shoulder up. The driver was exposed to debris or anything like that. And of course, Ayrton Senna, unfortunately, tragically lost his life in Imola in 1994. But it was still a lot safer than it was 25 years previous. And it's amazing how Senna believed he was justified to take on such bold overtaking manoeuvres. And you could argue that he was, is that it was his job to go for the win, to go for gaps. And Jackie Stewart believed in a more calculated approach. And I think that spawns from his time in Formula One, where it was in a much more dangerous era. And one of my favourite podcasts to listen to is Beyond the Grid, done by Tom Clarkson. Give it a listen, it's really good. And one of the earlier episodes with Jackie Stewart, and he very clearly said that he felt that Alain Prost, Ayrton Senna's great nemesis, was a more complete driver, a more calculating driver. And it's fascinating to see how there's a lot of ways to be a world champion. There's a lot of different characters of world champion in the way that they go about things, and that's one of the things that makes the current activity in the sport so fascinating, but also the history of the sport as well. When Sir Jackie Stewart's Grand Prix career was beginning to come to a close, very early on in the season, he made the decision to tell his two closest confidants, Walter Hayes and Ken Tyrrell, that he planned to retire at the end of the season, to give them the opportunity to make preparations for the following year, and also so that they could relax and enjoy the rest of his final season in 1973, where he did go on to become world champion as well. Also, throughout that year, they were creating effectively a succession plan for Sir Jackie's teammate, Francois Sauveur, a young, dynamic, exciting Frenchman who was almost, it appears to me, reading about it and watching and listening about it, it seemed that, Francois Sauveur was like a little brother to Sir Jackie, and very much like a little brother-in-law to Helen, Jackie's wife. And unfortunately, the story of the end of Jackie Stewart's racing career is quite a sad one, but I think it's one that needs to be told, and one that exemplifies who Jackie was and how who Jackie is, I should say, and what his values are. So at the end of his final race was due to be at Watkins Glen in the United States, and Ken Tyrrell had asked Sir Jackie that it would be Jackie's 100th Grand Prix where he would be finishing on, and he said, perhaps maybe if you were in the lead, maybe you could pull over and let Francois by. He said, I don't know, it's my 100th Grand Prix, or I'll see. But up for the couple of years previous to that, Sir Jackie had been giving all the information he could and all of the training and advice that you could give to young Francois Sauveur, and they were absolutely confident that he was drinking in all this information, and he was just becoming faster and faster all the time, and they were all completely confident that Francois would be the guy to pick up the mantle when Sir Jackie retired. But sadly, in the practice session for the American Grand Prix at Watkins Glen that year, Francois Soubert was tragically killed in an accident. And at that point, when Sir Jackie brought his car back into the pit and got out, that was the last time he would drive a racing car competitively. He went back to the hotel and brought the news to his wife Helen that he would no longer be a racing driver. And there's a great section in Sir Jackie's book where he explains this in detail, how he said to his wife, you know, that's it, I'm no longer a racing driver, I'm not doing this anymore. And of course both started to cry, and his wife Helen said, well, so does this mean we're going to grow old together? And they have grown old together, which is lovely, but sadly without their friend Francois. Francois Soubert was amazing pianist, classic pianist. And one of the most fascinating stories I heard was, it's quite spooky actually, Francois Soubert always said to Helen, who he viewed, I think, as a very much a big sister figure or even a mother figure, and said, if anything happens to me, you'll always know that I'll be there watching over you. And she never really understood what she meant. And years later, a young Mark Stewart, Jackie and Helen's son, wished to go and buy his mother a Christmas present. So he was taken to the local record shop and sent in with £5 or £10 to go in and buy a record. And the record he came out with, he only bought because of the way that the album cover looked. He didn't know which was the song. And when on Christmas Day, he presented his mother with this new record. And it was a record, Le Pathétique, which was the song that Francois would always play if there was a piano in the restaurant. So I thought that's the most incredible story, and just shows you the connection that drivers had at that time. If you compare that, it's just another world in any, not just Formula One, in any motorsport today. Just how even in something like MotoGP, where there's a little bit more danger, you do not see that level of camaraderie and friendship between the drivers. And I think that's in a way that's a shame, but it's how times have developed, and in many ways, in more ways, the sport is certainly in a better place, and a big part because of people Sir Jackie Stewart. Now, I talked earlier on in the episode about Jackie Stewart's legacy, what he's left behind from his career, and what he is still doing for our sport in motor racing. So one of the biggest things that he added to Scottish motor racing in particular was actually through the racing team that he owned with his son Paul. So Paul, highly educated at the Duke University in the United States, but once he completed that, wanted to become a racing driver and gave it a good go for a couple of years, getting to a decent level, running the team by himself and things, and eventually decided to turn the racing team into more of a business that he would run, and they would run young drivers in. And what they created between Sir Jackie and Paul was quite extraordinary. They created something called the Staircase of Talent, where they created a kind of three-tier system where they progressed drivers through different up the ladder of the sport, basically. But not only that, they didn't just give them the car and the tools to go and win races and to become successful. Jackie Stewart uniquely taught them the whole package of what you need to be a professional racing driver, and everything that comes with, and also what you need for when you retire as a racing driver as well. So the drivers were given public speaking courses, they were given a proper jacket and tie, and they would go and do sponsorship appearances. And if you looked at the Paul Stewart racing cars of that time, they had all of the all of the big Scottish companies on there, like Highland Spring and Tunnocks, Walker Shortbread, all these kinds of things. And there's a number of Scottish drivers who have the Stewart family to thank for their leg up in the sport, not only in having a car to drive, but also the sort of professionals that they've become. So drivers like Dario Franchitti, who's a four-time IndyCar champion, three-time IndyCar Indy 500 winner, amongst many other things. Alan McNish, a three-time Le Mans winner. David Coulthard, you know, multiple Formula One winner as well. A long-time Formula One driver, David Coulthard. You look at their achievements, these particular guys I just mentioned, all Scottish drivers who have all won at the very highest level in their particular discipline of motor racing. Three different disciplines, funnily enough, IndyCar, sports cars and Formula One. But if you look at what these guys do now, I think is when you really see the what Sir Jackie Stewart's left for these guys. You know, Dario Franchitti, if you look, you know, he's got an amazing career, both in commentary and working for his old team at Chip Ganassi Racing. Alan McNish raced sports cars for Audi for a very, very long time, and he's been entrusted with being the team principal of their new Formula E team, which is a big, big responsibility. And David Coulthard, he's got his own film production. He's a commentator with in Formula One and TV presenter, all these kinds of things. But when you just listen to these guys in interviews and watch them on the television, they all carry themselves in such a professional manner, and a real model. Really, you talk about role models. These guys are proper role models, and I suspect that guys like Sir Jackie Stewart and Jim Clark and people like that, but particularly Jackie, who would have had a direct impact on their career, I think that's what I think I'm getting to in this particular series, Icons of Scottish Motorsport. It started with Jim Clark, who taught Jackie Stewart how to be a Formula One driver in the best possible way, and then Sir Jackie has handed that down to the guys who we've seen today. And I sincerely hope that a number of Scottish drivers will follow on from that. And I actually think if for those who follow the British Touring Car Championships, Rory Butcher, son of the owner of Knockhill Racing Circuit, who's doing a great job in the British Touring Car Championship this year, winning a couple of races as well. But I think what's most impressive about Rory is the way that he conducts himself. He's a very humble guy. He certainly has a very, very nice delivery on the camera and all these kind of things that are very, very important to have a long career as a racing driver. And I'm sure he definitely will. So it's great to see another new era and generation of Scottish motor racing driver coming through. Now, in conclusion, there's one very important part of this particular episode. So, Sir Jackie Stewart he's in his 80s now, and still doing a travel that would just make you wince, a travel schedule that all of us at a quarter of the age would find exhausting. And one of the big drivers of his life at the moment is a new charity which he set up a couple of years ago called Race for Dementia. Sadly, his wife, Lady Helen Stewart, who's been by his side throughout his entire shooting career, motor racing career, and everything that's followed behind, sadly she's suffering quite badly with dementia at the moment. And when she was diagnosed with this condition, Race for Dementia was set up. Jackie Stewart did what he did best and kicked into action and opened up this new charity with £1 million of his own money. And the idea is with Race for Dementia is that they're trying to find the Adrian Newey or the Gordon Murray of brain science, if you like, and trying to take a kind of Formula One, every detail is important approach to finding some sort of cure or treatment for dementia. It's I'm sure it touches a chord with many of you listening. As my grandmother, Granny Thompson, granddad Thompson, who's a big part of the reason why I'm doing this particular why I'm involved in motorsport at all. But sadly, my Granny Thompson, she suffered with dementia, and it is a horrible condition. And I think Race for Dementia hopefully will be able to deliver deliver some good results to help people with this condition. So please, if I could ask you to do one thing, I'm not going to ask you to follow social media or anything like I normally do. All I'd like you to do is to go onto their website, Race for Dementia, and make a donation, big or small. It all makes a big difference to such a wonderful cause. And I'm sure, in his own way, Sir Jackie will appreciate that effort as well. So I hope I've done justice to an absolute legend of Scottish motor racing and just of just great Scots. You think of great Scots like Jim Clark, Sean Connery, Jackie Stewart. There's so many. Bill McLaren, the rugby commentator. Gavin Hastings, there's so many, and both in business and in sport. And again, for our little country of 5 million people to produce such incredible people that succeed at the very top level of their profession is just fantastic. So I really hope that I've done Jim Clark and Sir Jackie Stewart justice, and I look forward. There's a few more icons of Scottish motorsport to talk about from more recent times, which I can't wait to talk to about and read into a bit more, to try and find out a few extra tidbits and a few extra stories to tell. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode in our Icons of Scottish Motorsport series. Please subscribe to our channel on Podbean, iTunes or Stitcher, the Peter Mackay Motorsport Podcast. When you subscribe, every episode will come up on your phone. You'll get a little notification to say there's a new episode, so you can check it out on your morning commute or whenever you listen to your podcast. So thanks very much for listening, and I look forward to speaking to you again very soon.